Here we go. Give me a count around, Joel.
3, 2, 1.
Who's the best show here?
Jack Show!
Who's the best show here?
Jack Show!
All right, that's pretty good. That's the best one yet.
Pizza, pizza.
Don't be hating on my household attire, okay? I don't go to Walmart like this.
Yes, you do. Showtime!
Well, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a little thing tech show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that a Lincoln bat. But the show link, go direct to DLNTS.org. And ICChallengeLinuxLink.net. Bound tech show. Just sit right there, cause the calendar's just about to begin.
Welcome to episode 897 of the Linux Link Tech Show. On the show tonight, we have Pat.
Spring and Spunk.
We have Joel.
Hello.
No good evening tonight, huh?
Mm-hmm.
We have Joe.
Good evening.
And Flying Rich.
From the Hughes Compound Southern Command.
Rich, I've been thinking about your question all day today.
Well, you got to tell people what the question is.
Yeah, they don't know.
Why? Well, that opens it up for you to tell people your question.
Well, why do we let Joel talk about... Oh, not that one. So, I'm running, a lot of headless Linux servers at home. And so I have different issues. You know, maybe I want to do an apt update. Maybe, you know, the power's going to go off because of a hurricane. Lord knows that happens occasionally here in Florida. Maybe I want to issue a shutdown command and shut them all down. But there's just different management tasks. And so I just fired up Ansible. I kind of had it running a couple of times. And I got it, you know, spun up again. And, you know, I'm fairly happy with it. I've got Intel ESXi servers, I've got ARM Raspberry Pi ESXi servers, I've got Diet Pi, that's pretty much what most of my other, you know, ARM devices are running. So, and Ansible does a whole bunch of things, so you can, it's not quite tagging, you can group them. So you could say, hey, you know, maybe you have a group, I'm not talking specifically about my system, but maybe you have a group of web servers, a group of database servers. So you can say, hey, database servers this, you know, maybe you want to apply a certain patch. Say you have MySQL running and your web servers, let's say you're running light HTTP and you want to do certain things on them. Or maybe all of them, all of your web servers and all of your database servers are running Diet Pi. And so you can have multiple groups that include members that could be in and out of different groups. So you could say, hey, with Ansible, Diet Pi, you know, unfortunately you can't reach in and do the actual Diet Pi update, but you could do an apt update when you see there's a new version out. And so it does give you a bunch of flexibility. My question is, like, what is the best way to run your home architecture? And I'm primarily Linux, Linux and ESXi. So that's, like, what is the best way to do that? Is Ansible good? Is Puppet or Chef better? Is there something with a GUI on it? Because I did post some links to... what is it, the alternative site, where I'm like, hey, what's the alternatives to Ansible?
Well, I'm just going to, I mean, I'll repeat what I said directly to you, is I think if you're going to choose one of those three, Puppet, Chef, or Ansible, I think Ansible would be the way to go. It's not dependent on a client-server architecture that Puppet and Chef are. I think Chef is overkill, especially for a home network, for even a small business, I think is overkill. I can't speak so much to Puppet, but I would probably think it's kind of the same. Ansible seems a lot more flexible in that it's not beholden to the client-server architecture. So you could run it from anywhere. You just got to maintain whatever it is that your scripts and
maintain your playbooks
in one location, uh-huh. you know, on one, and you can run it from different locations if you want to have it backed up in different places. And,
right.
Although, you know, it's recommended you have SSH keys on all your systems.
Yep. Yeah. Did that.
Yeah. You don't need to because you could just deploy it with and log in with SSH, you know, using a password and still deploy it.
I just feel so much cooler when I have an SSH key set up.
Yeah. when you come to that one machine that doesn't, it's a pain in the butt. You're like, oh my
God. It's like, I got
to
type a password.
I know.
The question for you, Rich, though, is how many servers do you have?
I can't count that high.
Okay.
No. All right. So I've got like 6 Raspberry Pi ESXi ARM servers. I've got 3 Intel ESXi servers.
Okay, you I got
an Open Media Vault on a Rock Pi. I got Open Media Vault on a Pentium something. You know, what is it? What is the Celeron? That's it. The Celeron Nook. Yeah. And then I have like an Odroid XU4 that I'm running my legacy Plex server on. I got an Odroid N2 that I'm running my current Plex server on. I've got a couple of other devices.
Maybe it's time to downsize some of that stuff.
Well, and so I have one Raspberry Pi that's sniffing 433 megahertz from my weather station.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So, oh,
ADSB.
ADSB, thank you. Yeah.
I kind of paused on that. I'm probably going to fire that up again also. I do have, and there's a number of other things. So I'm running, what is the phone system? Why can't I think? Asterisk. So, yeah, I've got a bunch of things going on here. And the other thing I want to deploy is some, yep.
Aren't you moving?
No. I'm in my death house. I'm not moving from this house. Yeah. You know,
it's
those...
all set up there?
Yeah. Yep.
You can't consolidate it all down to a couple of machines and put all your Raspberry Pi and single board computers into Docker images?
I probably could converge the stuff, but then I wouldn't be so cool and have all these problems to talk about. Let me throw one more thing in the mix. I'm also running Observium to monitor, drive space and stuff like that on all of the other machines. Right. Like, so is there a better tool than Observium, like for a home user? I'm not talking. So everything that I'm talking about is, you know, the enthusiast home user.
Right.
What would be the best tools?
I'll have to look at that Observium because that sounds interesting. Because the other one I was thinking of was Zenos or what's the other one?
Talkbit?
No, there was another one, a monitoring
tool. And for the people listening, Observium is an SNMP monitoring tool.
Okay. Yeah, because there was another one. Several others, but okay. So,
and actually, now, so
you actually got me thinking about doing this here because one, I need to learn Ansible anyway. you know, because that's what we use. We write Ansible playbooks to get executed in Jenkins. So,
okay.
With GitOps. So, in fact, that's kind of one of the things I'm doing tomorrow. We're deploying a new Tomcat based server. Tomorrow afternoon. So, here's my server count. One of them is this one I'm using right now. That's actually where I have a Docker installed on my laptop here, and I've got several Docker images. Some of them right now I don't actually use most of them other than just learning how to deploy Docker containers right now. Eventually I will, although my Raspberry Pi 3 has Docker on it as well. That's running Open Media Vault with Docker on top of it. That uses a Docker image for MB, with my media streaming server. It has apps on iOS and Android and all that. So they have like all my Blu-ray rips are on that. And then I have my Pi Zero W with the DVAP software on it. It's running 2, as well as my Pi 4. But that one has, that's the one that's in my 7-inch display case. So, and it's essentially a glorified desk clock right now because it's, I put a flip clock screensaver on it. But now I'm thinking about that because what I'm probably going to do eventually is, I think after my move, is I'm going to probably buy a home server of sorts. I'm actually looking at an HP Omni server that's around, right around $800. And I can consolidate some of that. The Raspberry Pi 4 wouldn't be consolidated, but the Pi 3 I could probably retire and just move MB onto that, as long, along with all the storage. I can basically consolidate all that onto a couple hard drives in the new server. All right. But then this laptop, I would basically not use it for Docker. I would basically just reformat it and put something else on it. But if it's all in one basket, it's a little bit easier for a home user, you know. But for your case, it wouldn't be bad. Ansible, you should be able to do stuff like that. To, like, you might have an Ansible job that, oh my God, hurricane's coming down, shut everything down. You know,
yeah, that's easy. I got that going.
Yeah. So
actually,
like that,
but... Ansible isn't playing well. I've got a Docker instance of Home Automation Assistant,
okay,
and yeah, it's not really playing nice with that for some reason. I can do some rudimentary things with it. So I did forget a couple of things. So I don't have Octopi running right now, but I'm probably going to have two or three instances of that going too. And then I was running Spaghetti Detective to watch the 3D printers.
Right. Yeah, cause I don't, I actually don't run Octopi on anything right now. I think I have it somewhere. I probably got a Pi 3 with it on there. I just haven't set it back up, mostly because it's room and stuff right here. But you did get me thinking about that. And it might be worth me setting up Ansible, like say on my my Pi 3, that I could shut down all the Pi. I can basically set it up so I could shut down all the Pis with one command. But another alternative could be if you don't use something like Ansible at home, especially for certain things, like the rapid shutdown kind of deal. You can use something like Cluster SSH, which basically is it's a multi-windowed SSH client, and basically once you get logged into everything, since you have all the keys on there, you literally can basically set it up so that it's essentially just a shortcut on the desktop that will open up a terminal window and all those, and then you can set up Cluster SSH so you send the same command to everything at the same time without having to set up anything like Ansible.
That's a good point. You know, something like Ansible, I might want to shut down my ESXi servers first and then shut down my Open Media Vault servers after that. You know, so right. I might want to... So if you... I think Cluster SSH is good if you don't want to do any scripting. Want something a little more sophisticated, yeah, I think you probably need to go to Ansible. So.
Yeah. You can tier it. You can tier it. Like you can say, I want you to shut down all the VMs running on the ESXi cluster first, then shut down the ESXi cluster. You know, that way everything gets a nice sane safe shutdown. That's kind of what we do with what we call a stop start automation we have. So basically. We have a stop-start automation for OS patching. So we'll execute a command. It does the patching, and then it stops the machine. Then after this machine is stopped, it starts the machine back up. And it also will bring up our application as well. So it is more than just adding things into services and stuff like that. Although if the application in point has Etsy services set up so that's for example you have something set up as a service, then it will shut it down. So, and that's Windows or Linux either. So, but it might be worth me setting up Ansible because I really do need to learn it, because we're doing Ansible and we're also going to be probably doing I don't know how soon our team's going to start using Kubernetes. And if we're using Kubernetes with some other container, or if we're using Kubernetes with Docker, I don't know if we're doing that.
So explain to people what Kubernetes is and how it functions with Docker.
It's a container. Yeah, it's a containerization. Not. It doesn't do the containerization itself, but basically it splits up.
It's your container orchestration.
Yes, exactly.
Didn't Kubernetes drop Docker?
I thought there was something like
No. I think what you might be thinking of, Joe, is that Docker has its own thing called Docker Swarm.
Right, that's right.
So you don't necessarily, in order to do that, to split the containers across multiple physical servers, you don't have to have Kubernetes.
And guys, I got to apologize. We're in the heat of good discussion. I got to jump on another podcast.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're gonna go mini PCing?
What? I was about to weigh in on something.
Well, I'll have to listen to you later.
Oh,
there you go.
I'll have to catch you on the replay, guys. Thanks a lot. I really do appreciate the conversation. Unfortunately, we haven't done mini PC in a long time, so we're gonna jump on that.
I noticed. In fact, I think I might have took it out of my feet.
No. All right, guys, have a good evening, and thank you.
Yeah. But, yep. Yeah, I do need to learn Ansible, so I might just set it up in, because, if you take, I actually have to look at it. I have an account via work, via A Cloud Guru, which is the same. I think they're the same people that do Linux Academy. I have to see. I think there might be some training in there, but part of the training is doing the hands-on thing, and that's kind of the one thing I should have, because I'm working towards all of our team has to work on up till the end of April to get a certification. So right now I'm working on the cloud certification, AWS cloud practitioner certification, because it's one of the first ones in the AWS string of certifications, and it's also the cheapest one right now, because I have to pay for it out of my pocket, and the company will pay once I pass the exam. So Cloud Guru does have practice exams, which is really good. As well as video and walking you through certain things. The cloud practitioner is probably the least technical of them all. It is technical, but it's probably the most useful if you're relatively new to AWS and learning all the different technology. Like, for example, what is Route 53? All right, and if you don't know anything about AWS, Route 53 is their DNS service. So, just knowing what it is, sometimes helps me already in my current job. Cause when I first started on the cloud team, they started talking about Route 53 and I was like, what the fuck is that? Cause the one thing I found with AWS is Amazon kind of, I won't say reinvents the wheel, but makes the wheel, especially for their certifications, very, very specific to them. Cloud computing is so new of a technology that all the vendors are, there's no real standard from one vendor to the next in a lot of cases. So learning how to do things in AWS doesn't necessarily teach you and prepare you to learn things in Google's cloud or Azure. So, because the tools are different. So eventually, hopefully, they'll have a standard. And I think that's actually why containerization is getting to be as big a deal, because it's one of those technologies that can make it easier for you to move from one cloud provider to another. Because you can just pick up the container and deploy it on the new cloud service. So... and it's just dividing it's the micro service technologies, you know, like, you know, why build a complete server just for RabbitMQ when you can just put a RabbitMQ container on the server and be done with it?
Joe.
No.
No.
To more target answer your question, you know, by and large, Kubernetes, Docker go hand in hand, but you can run other container technologies on Kubernetes.
Exactly.
So it's not strictly married. And you might ask yourself, what other technology, Docker, container technologies are there other than Docker?
C-Space?
I don't know. I was curious. What other ones are there? Like, if you look at the Kubernetes documentation,
that's something I'll have to Google.
they have support for C group, and they have support for Containerd. I suspect they have support for other things. I'm not 100% sure. I remember hearing about Containerd a long time ago. I don't know if anything still. What other things?
Well, I'll say the clear winner on containers is Docker.
Yes, and so there's other ones like LXC and Hyper-V containers, which
Microsoft's.
Yeah, and well, I guess you'd also consider. Would VirtualBox machines be considered containers?
No, they're VMs.
They're virtual machines.
Yeah. RKT, Podman, RunC. I've never used any of those.
Me either.
No, App Images I don't think would be
App Images essentially is, that's just an installation. Basically, containing everything in an app, right, or in a binary that you can download, right?
But is it isolated?
It is. They're isolated.
Well, yeah. The app image has all the libraries the application needs. So.
Yeah, but I guess when we generally talk about, like, when I think of container, like a Docker container, it's like a complete operating system.
Yeah.
And service or whatever it is that you're going to, like, it does one thing, be it a web server or a database or chat server or whatever, whereas an app image or what is Red Hat's one? Flatpak. You mean like Flatpak app image and snap packages?
Yeah.
I guess you can say they're kind of containerized, but, and maybe similar principles, but you can't just like fire up the app, a Flatpak, without it being already inside an operating system with the supporting libraries. Whereas you could probably say the same thing about a Docker container. You can't use that Docker container unless you're using it with Docker, but it's not just a single application. It's like the whole operating system. I that's what I would say the difference between those two things are, but they share similar ideas. So yeah, it is containerized. By and large, for the most part, although it does have hooks in, I think, to your home directories and stuff like that, and file systems, so that if you fire up GIMP in an app image and you make a piece of artwork, you're not going to lose it when you shut that app image down.
Nope. Of course, and then the other alternatives to Kubernetes is Red Hat's OpenShift, and we also mentioned Docker Swarm as well.
Now, what Rich had sent out was, like, he was looking at alternatives to Ansible, and he sent this link in this page, and they're like, you know, obviously to me, alternatives to Ansible Puppet and Chef and Salt make sense. I question Terraform being on this list. AWS CloudFormation, Jenkins, Docker, and Kubernetes to me do not seem to be the same as Puppet, Chef, or Ansible, or Salt.
I mean, Jenkins can execute Ansible playbooks, but...
And I guess that kind of like it depends. If you're looking at Ansible, you could use Ansible in place of Jenkins, and you could use Ansible in place of Terraform is a way to define your infrastructure, and it relies on being able to work with another service.
Yeah, so, like AWS.
Yeah. So, although, I mean, if you're using Ansible to deploy stuff into the cloud, you could probably replace it with Terraform, but for Rich's purposes and in defining a whole network like that, I really don't think Terraform is going to be the way to go. Not at all.
Yep.
And Docker, I
tend to agree, too. I mean,
I don't think, like... If he was running Docker containers
on one machine.
Yeah, that would kind of make sense, but using Kubernetes and Docker, but he's not. He's looking at, like, if you were taking it into a data center, it's like blasting out stuff onto a server.
See, Kubernetes would be too much to me as well, because what are the odds? See, the Kubernetes, where it shines is when you have more than one node. You know, you can have a single node Kubernetes node set up. Well, first off, that setting it up, I tried doing that at home so far, and I failed miserably.
It doesn't make sense to blast out a container on a Raspberry Pi.
Right.
If all you're doing is like, okay, I'm not going to set up this Raspberry Pi to do what it's going to do. I'm going to set it up to run containers, and I'm going to, you know, blast the container out to it.
It's possible.
I'm not saying you can't.
Right.
But if you want a mail server or a web server, so to speak,
right.
Do you want your Raspberry Pi running a web server running, like Kubernetes to be able to be like a Kubernetes agent? It's an agent?
Right.
I forget the terminology.
Node, I thought it was, but so I might be wrong, yeah.
Do you want it to be able to run a container on that Raspberry Pi, or do you just want it to run the web server? So if you want to set it up to run the web server, Ansible is the way to go. Like, I'm not saying you can't run Docker containers or containerization on Raspberry Pi. Obviously, you can.
Right.
But
And I'm doing it, and actually, the only reason I'm doing it is because it's changed. It used to be you can basically go and get a pre-done Open Media Vault image, which is basically, it was based on Raspbian, or now it's called Raspberry Pi OS, that had Open Media Vault on it. Ever since, I'm trying to remember, I think I have to see what version of OMB I'm running right now, but that kind of went away, and the new instructions on, I believe it was from the Open Media Vault site itself, from that project, was to basically set up your SD card with Raspberry Pi OS, and then install this and install that, and then run this script, something like that. I'm greatly simplifying it. But once Open Media Vault's running, you literally can log into the Open Media Vault image and click, 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 and Docker and Portainer is installed. Okay? And then once you're into Portainer, you can either by hand type in things in Portainer to download the Docker image and to set it up, all right? Or you can also, actually what I found too is is if it might be easier to just type in the commands, the command prompt to deploy the image, but then you can use Portainer to manage it. Or that way you can, like, for example, if you just want to shut down that container because you, either you're not using it for the moment and you, or maybe one of your other containers is eating up too much resources and you need to free up more resources for whatever you're doing, all right? So Portainer is great for, like, if you just want to shut just one of the containers down. You don't want to delete it or nothing. You just want to shut it down, you know? And it's also great for man, like for just learning it. Like, you can go into Portainer and say, I want to install Drupal. All right. So it'll install, actually in that case, it installs, technically installs two containers because it installs one container for Drupal itself and one for, it's not all in one shot because I think, so you're trying to think how I did it. When I installed Drupal, I installed the one container that had MariaDB. And then when I went to set up the Drupal instance, it technically tied those two together. All right. So basically, they are in a stack in Drupal. So both of those are dependent on each other. You know, so for example, Docker, well then when you reboot your server and it starts Docker up, and if you have it scheduled to bring those containers up on reboot, it's going to bring up SQL, you know, MariaDB first, then it'll bring up the Docker container that has Drupal in it. So not that I actually use Drupal on my home network, I was just playing around with it just so that I had something to learn about containers with. So
this was on Open Media Vault.
Yeah, Open Media Vault. Well, Open Media Vault on the Pi. Well, first off, I tried doing the Drupal MariaDB thing on the Pi. Well, part of the problem is a lot of the Docker containers are x86 specific, it didn't really work too well there. But MB, though, is something I have installed in the container on my Pi, and it works great.
Well, I thought Open Media Vault was for delivering media files and stuff. Why is it setting up containers?
Yeah, it is and it isn't. The containers is kind of an addition on top of it. But you can, Open Media Vault itself will run things like DLNA or... I think you can also install if you wanted to, for example, if you still ran iTunes, you could basically put like all your music files in there and tell Open Media Vault where it is, and then you know the old function that I don't even know if iTunes supports it anymore, but back in the day when I actually had a Mac and I used iTunes more. I still have a Mac. It's just not very useful. It's a PowerBook G4. But anyway, but back then, my favorite pastimes when I had a Mac was, and I was in a hotel room, was to fire up on the hotel Wi-Fi, fire up iTunes, and then you can see how many people had iTunes libraries that were open on the hotel network. but you can do the same thing with Open Media Vault. Is you can install a plugin so that it basically acts like iTunes.
But what does that have to do with Docker containers?
It's just part of it. It's just an addition on top of it. So, and Open Media Vault itself makes it easy to install all the prerequisites and all that stuff. You basically, it's button clicks to install Docker. So, when you do that, it also sets up Portainer, which is just a management application, which itself is a Docker container. So, but MB, there was instructions for setting up MB on top of the Pi in several places. Just Google it, you'll find it. And it walks you through when you're setting up MB, you define paths to where your media is that exists on the Open Media Vault server, and then when you boot up, when the Docker container comes up, it'll look in those, and then it'll start scanning the library once you set it up. That's how it works. OpenMe also includes Samba support, so all my Windows laptops can mount the storage that I got listed on there. It also does... there used to be some things it would do itself without having the need for Docker. You could install Plex from within OpenMedia Vault and set a Plex server. I didn't like Plex as much as I like MB. Then Plex requires you to have a Plex account. Even if your Plex server isn't accessible on the internet, you have to have a Plex account. And I'm like, well, I don't want my MB server available on the internet. I want it just from in my house. So, or my media serving thing. So that's why I set up MB. And it just works well. And Link likes it too. Link uses it as well. But do you need to do that? Can you install MB on the Pi without the Docker container? Sure, you can. You can install it on anything. But that's why I chose to do it that way, because it was much easier to set it up on a Docker container than it was to try and install all the dependencies on the Pi. You know, it basically is a Docker container that has everything you need in it, including the whatever database it uses. So I'm not sure if it actually uses a database. I have to look at it. I think it does, but because it does keep track of things like how many times you play things, and you can favorite things and stuff like that. I think it'll also transcode too. So like, for example, if you're on an older system, say your screen is only like a 1024 by 768, there's no sense in streaming 1080p when you can stream far less than that, and it will look just as good. You know, so it will do the transcoding. And it works well. I don't have a problem with it. I've watched whole movies on it and not had a problem with it. So, and the nice thing about it is it has apps. So it has an Android app as well as a iOS and iPad app as well. It also has plugins for Roku, so I can use MB on my Roku based TV. So there's that. That's one of the things I am going to purchase for the new home office, is I'm going to get TV for the office. I'm not sure what kind of TV I'm going to get for that, though. Whether I want to get like an Android TV or if I want another Roku TV.
All right, but I wouldn't consider OpenMedia Vault a way to be running Docker container.
Not the exclusive way, no. And in fact, like I said, I had problems getting, because I started off just playing, when I started playing with Docker, that's how I started off, was just playing with it on my Pi 3. And that's kind of what got me to install it on this laptop. So Docker's running on this laptop that I'm using right now for the show.
So what did you say it ran port what?
Portainer. So it's portainer.io, I think, is the project.
Yeah, portainer.io. Container management made easy.
Yep. Yeah, it is easy. You know. I think the graphical front end for me helps me figure out the command line specifics of going to grab the container from the Docker. I can't, don't even remember what the Docker website is now. Because there's a website for the container.
Docker.io?
Thank you. That's it. Yep.
So Portania works with Docker, Docker Swarm, or Kubernetes. Although I wonder, why would you want to use Portania if you already have Kubernetes?
You probably wouldn't for Kubernetes. Although, at least I wouldn't think so.
container management, Kubernetes container orchestration. Yeah, I can see. One of the things that when Richard brought this up, it really makes me question what I do here, which is pretty much nothing.
Right.
It's like why did I not write down exactly what I did? And I thought I did at the time, what I did to set up my mail server and what I did to set this up and that up. And I'm like, I thought I wrote all that stuff down about my mail server, all that setup and where to get that information from, in case I ever need to do it again. But now I have no idea where it is. If I did do that, I can't find it. And then on top of that, I'm like, I should set something up. And then I'm like, well, that's just another thing I got to deal with and maintain over a long period of time. Like, why? I tried MediaWiki before in the past and some of those things that don't require a database. And I was just like, it's such a pain in the ass to work with, and I don't like it. And I should just use text files.
And you do that shit all damn day, and the last thing you want to do when you want to use your stuff at home is to deal with it.
Yeah, but then when it comes time to fix something, then I'm like, whoa, here we go again.
Yep. Well, and that's like I only ever set up anything on my home network for myself, because getting my family to use MB is going to be a stretch. Now, granted, a lot of times they'll say, hey, we have that movie. Why don't we watch that on the TV? So rather than go hunt around for the Blu-ray, I'll just load up the MB plugin on Heroku and start it.
But
like, for example, on the laptop here, I actually have a total of 5 containers running. I have GitLab, Jenkins, although I haven't done anything with Jenkins yet. In fact, I may actually have to redo that container because I don't know if I remember the password I set up for it. And then there's GitLab the Drupal setup I had, and then Portainer itself. So, but it also lets you manage stacks and set up stacks and set up networks and stuff like that, all within the Docker infrastructure. So,
maybe I put it on my file server. Who knows where my documentation went?
Do you even have a file server at home?
Yeah, I do.
Now that's like where was we at? One of our Slack channels. I saw one of the guys that I know that works in platform that I've worked with off and on. Somebody had asked to set up SIFS between 2 Linux boxes, and he's like, SIFS between 2 Linux boxes? And I'm like, yeah, it'll work, but why are you doing that when you can do NFS? Or something better supported? I don't know. It just makes me laugh, though. And then I spent probably far too much time on a daily basis in Slack. I don't know about you, Dan, but that's been ever, especially since the pandemic, we're chatting on Slack all the freaking time.
Oh, man, I'll tell you what, we got some bad news this week.
Uh-oh.
This is terrible. Like, yeah, we use Slack all the time, and I wonder how long that's going to last, because they're cut costs, we're getting rid of Zoom memberships, and we're just going to...
Oh, no.
Because we have Microsoft 365, so we're just going to make everybody use Teams, and I freaking hate
Skype.
Teams.
It's because Teams is terrible.
Skype. Teams is terrible. I agree.
We've been using Mattermost a lot.
Right. Well, see, Mattermost is what? I guess it's like Slack. Yeah.
But yeah, no, we don't have a choice on like there's
well,
like
we don't either.
I mean, we could still use Zoom, the free Zoom.
Right.
But they're like, if you're gonna do a meeting that involves other people around the company, no more Zoom. You have to use Microsoft Teams.
Right. See, we use Zoom a lot. And one little trick, if you're running into an issue like during your workday, since we're all working from home now, and your audio, either your connections start to get sketchy in Zoom, try switching to your cell for the voice portion of the call, and that usually smooths things out.
Well, we also use we have to be careful, but we use WhatsApp for outside of work for the team. But the whole thing is that we are absolutely 100% not allowed to put anything that's actually about the business into WhatsApp. So we are allowed to communicate with each other over WhatsApp and say, hey, I'm sick today, or hey, I'm going to be 20 minutes late, or something to that effect.
Which makes sense, yeah.
But we cannot do any work or pass any knowledge about work over WhatsApp.
Now, do you use Slack calls, Dan, at all?
Slack calls? No.
I have
used it. It's not.
It does work. Yeah.
It's not bad. I've used that.
It's not as good as Zoom.
No. And Microsoft Teams video conferencing, I don't know if it's still called Skype or they're moving away from Skype. Whatever. It is a pig, and it's terrible.
It is.
I'm sorry, Joe. Yeah,
here's the extent of our company's use of Slack. There's a group of developers in our infrastructure. I think either an infrastructure or platform. I don't remember where. But they wrote something called LucyBot. Okay. The Lucy part comes from our company name. So essentially what it does is it has multiple functions, right? They keep adding stuff to it. It's kind of like an AI of sorts, right? So like if I'm in a Slack channel and I plug in a change, a number from Snow, it connects out to Snow and then expands that. So all I have to do is put the change number into the Slack and it expands that. Like, for example, I was doing a clone this morning. So right before I started the clone, I copy-pasted that change number from Snow into the client Slack. And by the way, I say client Slack channel. The client doesn't have access to that. That's just the Slack channel we use for all communications about that client. Okay. So I'll put that in there. Say I'm starting the clone listed in change, blah, blah, blah. And then it'll expand that out and say, oh, he's cloning test two. All right. So this is essentially what I did today. So that's one of the things. The other thing is it will like you can issue certain commands in the Slack channel that we have called self-service that uses LucyBot. For right now, it will only like backup, do a snapshot backup of Linux volumes. So like UO3 or UO99 or something like whatever the Linux volume is.
Okay, how did we get here? I thought we were still talking about communication methods.
Well, because we're kind of using Slack for not just communications, but actually doing things, like actually doing backups and stuff, which is kind of, and that's kind of how flexible and powerful Slack is.
Why would you use Slack to do a backup?
You know,
good question, huh?
I think the goal is so that platform doesn't have to do it for us. We kick that off, and then it kicks off a Jenkins job to do the thing for us, and we don't have to have a login to Jenkins because they don't want to necessarily set up everyone in Jenkins necessarily, you know, to do day-to-day things. So, but – and it does other things too, like
Wait, who's kicking off a backup? You?
No.
The customer?
Well, you do. Like, for example, you would put the change number in the self-service channel, and then you would put a reply under that, which actually has the backup command that said to LucyBot, which the LucyBot will then execute the backup for you. So that's how serious our company is with Slack, is we're actually building tools that where you can use that by just logging into Slack. So like the command in our case is something like LucyBot, please snapshot.
Why do you have to be this? Why do you have to use manners?
You don't have to. Yeah, I mean it's just I'm trying to think how you say it. I'm just trying to remember how the command is formatted. Cause see, it doesn't work for the ones I want to use it for the most right now, which is my Windows boxing. So like a good example is I built WebAdvisor is our product, but I built a site to set up SAML authentication on it today. Or not today, the other day. And I wanted to back up the directory before I started adding that stuff to it.
Did you do it all through Slack?
I couldn't because it's not supported on Windows
yet. Not yet, right?
So
Slack's your automation tool now?
In some cases, it can be, yes. So,
looks like someone's going a little crazy with the Slack plugins.
Yeah, I think they are. Because we have plugins. I have the Zoom plugin for Slack. I have, because basically I can hit the little phone, you know, they have the little phone icon in Slack. You know, if you click on that, it gives me the option of, right now it gives me the option either using Zoom or Slack calls. So,
do you order your lunch through Slack too?
I don't think we can.
Not yet. You can't. Why not? They have the plugins.
I mean, I have a corporate card still. I mean, I don't use that. I used it to order lunch a couple times in the last year because the boss said, "Hey, we got a lot of long meetings, so I'm buying lunch. So go ahead and put it on your expense card and go."
You hear that?
Steak and lobster kind of day.
You hear that, Joe? In another year or two, you just use Slack to run your Docker containers.
Okay.
I wouldn't put it past corporate card.
You heard
corporate card. Hey, lunch is on me today. Yeah, it's definitely going to be steak and lobster, both side by side.
Or I had company didn't pay for it. I paid for it. Monday's my bachelor night because that's right now that's the night that Luke bowls, and I can't go because they have to kind of get there before I get off work. So that's the night that Joel does whatever he wants for dinner.
That sounds right. Dirty.
Oh, I had what did I have? I don't even remember what I had this week. I think last week I had Condado Tacos.
That sounds even dirtier.
What's a Condado Taco?
It's a small taco chain here in Columbus. I had one with pork on it.
He lives in an apartment complex, so he has Hispanic neighbors.
No Hispanic, but Indian.
Is it an Indian taco?
No, it's Mexican taco. But what did I have? Oh, no, I remember what I had Monday. BB Bop. You ever eat a BB Bop?
I have no idea what that is.
BB Bop Asian Grill. They are a chain. And it was actually probably the most healthy thing I ordered for dinner one night. Because I had a... because they do these like Asian style bowls, and you can kind of put what kind of sauce you want in it. So I had teriyaki beef. Then for vegetables, I had corn, black beans, sesame kale, and carrots.
Dude,
it's awesome.
I made a burrito skillet today, and it was really good, and the macros on it are like awesome. Like,
yep.
What was it, a pound of ground buffalo or ground bison.
Nice.
But I only had half of it. I made a whole thing, so I got lunch for tomorrow if I want it. And then taco seasoning and tomato and green peppers in a can, and a can of black beans, and fat-free cheese, and a couple of low-carb tortillas chopped up and put in there. That thing is freaking delicious.
Yep. Oh, and I forgot to, you can get it like on top of rice, which I didn't do rice, but they also have riced cauliflower that you can do instead, which is just nasty. I don't even think about that. But I ended up having mine on I'm trying to remember what it was, a noodle that was made out of sweet potato. Now it wasn't actually like sweet potato. It was actually more like a noodle.
Zoodle.
Was it clear?
Zero.
Yeah, it was kind of clear. Yeah.
Yeah, I've had shiitake. Made those. No, they're I forget what exactly they're called, but they're it's like a rice noodle, but it's made it's like a cellophane noodle or a rice noodle, but it's made out of potato, sweet potato starch.
Right. Yeah.
Because I've got a couple of packages in there of zero calorie noodles that are relatively clear until you're done cooking them.
These remain translucent through the whole process.
Japchae sweet potato noodles. It's JAPCHAE.
I get them down at the Asian market over here. The Hampton Oriental Market is so good. I love it.
I had to order shirataki noodles from Amazon.
Nice.
And they're okay. They're not great.
So the other alternatives was you can put your meat on top of a super green salad, purple rice, white rice, or cauliflower rice, which is the new one. And then
My wife got me this peach habanero sauce that's like zero calories.
Ooh, that sounds delicious.
Dude, it is incredible.
It does sound good. And I'm not usually a fan of like peach salsa, because that just, to me, I'm like, peach salsa? Okay.
Joe.
But that does sound good, though.
I have an air fryer thing.
Yep.
Cool. Tell me about it. So
I did two things. Like today I had a boneless teriyaki chicken thighs over some vegetables. But I didn't make that in the air fryer. I made that in my, I was bummed out because I ordered a carbon steel pan and it came today, but I couldn't use it because I had to season it first. So I just used my cast iron pan. Like I deboned the chicken last night and let it over. And man, it was so good. But and I got that idea, that recipe, because I made my own teriyaki sauce after watching the episode on Pro Home Cooks, because I really like his stuff. But he did an air fryer chicken wing test of six different methods for making chicken wings in the air fryer. And
did any of them come out actually crispy?
and that's what he was trying to do, find out which one he's going to get the crispiest. And the one that won was the double fry method, which is what he did is he took his chicken wings and he put them in the air fryer after he had a seasoning and then just flour for this at 250 degrees for 20 minutes. And then put them in the refrigerator for 30 minutes, take them back out, and he had them at 400 degrees for 8 minutes. So,
all right.
I did that, but I went, when I pulled my chicken wings out after 20 minutes at 250 degrees, they had only reached internal temperature of like 130 degrees.
And oh, that's like, not enough.
I'm like, there's no way that 8 minutes of 400 or 425 or 450 is going to bring those up after being in the refrigerator for half hour. So I actually had to leave them in for 40 minutes. I did it for 30 minutes total. I think I did it for 40 minutes total at 250, and they still weren't up high enough. I bumped it up to 275 for another 10 minutes, and it got to 165. which is the safe, which they consider a safe temperature, popped them in the refrigerator, and then pulled them back out, sprayed them with a little canola oil on both sides, put them back in at 425 for 8 minutes, pulled them out, and they were really good. Now, of course, I still have not found a way to get them as crispy as if you fried them, but they were damn good, man.
Dude.
They were, my daughter loved them. They were so good.
I know we talked maybe a couple shows ago about, what was it, fish and chips. And like 2 days in a row, yesterday and the day before, I made fish and chips in the air fryer. One of them was like a pre-bought, pre-breaded salmon, something like that. I'm not sure. But it came out okay. It was just, you know, a lot higher calorie than I wanted. It was like 650 calories for that. But I made myself some cod with breadcrumb that my wife got me called panko. And all I did was I take the cod, I dip it in egg white.
Okay.
And just, you know, just
roll it,
get
in
it
panko.
Good soak, and then throw it in the panko, flip it over, get it completely covered, and then it was 400 degrees for, I think it came out to 16 minutes, 14 minutes, somewhere. And yeah, it came out perfect. I loved it.
Nice.
A little bit of avocado spray on the outside for that crisping.
You didn't have to flip them at all, did you?
I did flip them halfway through.
Okay,
because,
yeah, I think that helped.
The bottom was still staying a little bit soggy while the top was crisp, so I flipped it over. And
nice.
Got also, like, now, is your air fryer, is it like more like less like a pan on the bottom, or like a more like a fry grid?
I have a couple of different slide-out portions, and one of them it's got a bunch of holes in the bottom specifically for a tray for air frying.
Okay, yeah. That's kind of how one thing I always do when I put before I put anything on that tray, I will spray it down with either Pam, or right now, because I couldn't find any Pam when I was at the store that day, I have some Luana coconut oil in a spray can. And that works pretty well, and that stops things from sticking onto it.
I like the avocado spray. That's, you know, a bit of healthy fats, but it's not really lower calorie. I mean, all of your sprays are about the same amount of calories. It's
exactly.
Just,
I
want to pick the fats that I'm using.
Right, I'm with you.
And the nice thing about it, when you're making the fish and chips, is I know how long it takes to heat up, and I can set the fries for 4 minutes and then just slide it in while it's heating up. And then as soon as that's done, pull it out, slide in the other one, set the new time, and kick it off, and it's already at the right temperature.
There you go. Yep.
Now, Joe, one thing I have found, and this is kind of cheating, but When I roast potatoes in particular in the air fryer basket, they turn out great, but they're not super crispy. When I do them in the oven, they come out really crispy, largely because I have put oil in the bottom of the pan, and it essentially fries them when they're in that oil. So that's a little cheating. But what I wanted to add with those chicken wings, I had a piece of chicken that, when I cut the wings up, fell off, and I put that in there with them. And so when I was finished, this didn't have any breading on it at all. I just put it in just like it was. And I took a bite of that chicken, and I was like, holy shit, this tastes really good. It reminded me of close to when I would used to go to this Thai restaurant down in Chesapeake where I worked. They had these fried chicken bites, but they weren't like coated in anything. It was just like fried chicken.
Right.
And it tasted just like that. And I figured if I would marinate those in probably like some soy sauce dip of some kind, and then put them in there and air fry them, I think those things are going to taste wonderful.
Like a sweet teriyaki sauce, just rub it a little bit and toss it in there.
I was thinking more towards Thai influence would be like a little bit of soy sauce mixed with some fish sauce and something like that. But yes, absolutely, teriyaki would do really good too. I would try both of those.
Let's say Thai. You could put like some peanut bits on the outside too. I think that might work.
Use some almond flour on the outside.
Well, yeah, something like that.
That's an idea because I got a shit ton of almond flour from when my daughters decided they were gonna try keto, and we ended up with like 4 bags of almond flour that nobody touched.
You mentioned keto. I haven't tried them yet. But I was at the store. I saw this and I thought, why not? I threw it in the cart. But it was a keto baking mix for snickerdoodles. So I'll have to try that and see how that comes out.
I actually made some really, really good homemade protein bars. Taste just like brownies.
Except they go
in the freezer.
I need to get some stuff to use my PB powdered peanut butter with.
Anytime you would use regular peanut butter.
What did you make it with, Joe?
I can't even remember the brand of protein powder I use, but it's a chocolate cake flavor. And then I was following Greg Doucette's Score protein bar recipe, except instead of Score, I was using Heath, because you can't get Score bits in the store here. You have to get Heath bits.
Right.
But yeah, it's Fiber Yum. It's like a 1 1/3 cups Fiber Yum syrup, which is a fiber-based sweetener. And then like 8 scoops of protein powder. And this makes like 8 servings or 10 servings, however you end up doing it. I think I cut it into 9 parts, which made like 200 calorie servings.
That's right.
And then I think it's... No, this recipe doesn't have the powdered peanut butter. The other one that I make has the powdered peanut butter that goes in it. And yes, I have quite a bit of powdered peanut butter.
Yep.
And then some caramel and caramel extract, and then it's imitation caramel extract. And then, Walden's Farms caramel syrup, which is 0 calorie. And you mix it all together and you freeze it for 2 hours, then you cut it up, you wrap it in wax paper, and you stick it back in the freezer.
Interesting.
Came out super good this time.
Yeah, I might have to look into making like some protein bars or something with that PB fit stuff. I have just mixed it up and used it like peanut butter. Actually, I think there was a recipe on the side of it for making peanut butter cookies.
Yeah, I have a recipe or two. They came out pretty good when I made protein bars out of them.
Now, I do have some Swerve, which is I'm trying to remember what sweetener that is. It is a sweetener, not sugar, and it's low carb. I have it because I bought some. I've made it at least once. It was a keto recipe for key lime pie that's made with avocados, and it came out pretty decent. Even my wife liked it, which is unusual. But you use that as a sweetener in it, as well as I think you also used it. The crust was like almond flour and something else. I can't remember what the crust was made out of. But it looked like graham cracker and almost tastes like it, but it wasn't. But that came out pretty good. But I still have a bag of it left because I was going to make it again, and I never got around to it. So I might try, and you're supposed to be able to bake that. So I might try, see if I can't come up with, a peanut butter cookie recipe on my own that uses that.
I might try an oatmeal bake.
Yeah.
An oatmeal bar, one of the two. Either an oatmeal bake or an oatmeal bar that's heavy on the peanut butter powder.
Yeah. That could work. that could work, and that would be pretty tasty too, I would think, with the oats and the peanut butter mixed together, kind of like a no-bake cookie.
I've also done a bunch of different overnight oats in mason jars. Yeah. And those have been pretty good. Those were a little bit higher calorie, but they were also slightly larger meals. So,
yep.
Yeah, quite tasty. You know, some fat-free yogurt, Greek yogurt, some frozen fruit, whatever you want, really. I usually went with the mixed berry or the strawberry. And then a scoop of protein powder, a cup of oats, and what, a cup of almond milk. And yeah, that stuff is good.
That's what I should get when I hit the store this weekend, is I should get some yogurt and some frozen fruit, like some strawberries or something that I can make smoothies at home with that peanut butter in it.
Yeah, it's really good in smoothies and well, I guess you'd call it like protein fluff. It's basically homemade ice cream. You use the frozen fruit, some xanthan gum, some almond milk, some protein powder, and you put it all together, blend it up real good, and it just fluffs up real big, and it's quite tasty.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and I forgot to mention, I actually got a dessert with my meal from BB Bop. Coconut milk pudding with mango. And that was delicious.
Yeah, my wife has gotten me a couple of the coconut milk yogurts. Those are pretty decent.
And I have tried the coconut milk coffee creamer, and that is good too.
Once again, that's what protein powder is for.
Mm.
Or peanut butter powder. Especially if you get the PB Fit and PB2 both make a chocolate peanut butter powder.
Yes, I gotta find that. Because I had the regular peanut butter powder.
Yeah, Walmart has a their own brand of like peanut butter powder. And it's okay. It's just not as good as the PB2 or the PB Fit unless you throw some sweetener at it. What I like to do is take the peanut butter powder and take two servings worth of the powder and mix it up in a small container, and then take some unsweetened baking chocolate and put it on top, and then stick it in the microwave and let some of the moisture from the peanut butter evaporate off in the microwave and also melt the chocolate on top. So you're basically eating a homemade Reese's.
You're talking about my favorite Easter candy.
Easter, Halloween, birthday, Christmas. Yeah.
The holiday Reese's eggs are better than the peanut butter cups. Yeah.
No, too sweet.
Not better for you, but they're better tasting.
And actually, I found one that was on sale at Walmart that was made with like stevia. But they were clearancing it for like 50 cents each, so they won't last.
What were those? What were those? They weren't the Atkins ones, were they?
Hold on, and let me see. They're called Lily's. Lily's, okay. Less Sugar Sweet Life Milk Chocolate Style Peanut Butter Cups. Stevia sweetened, 40% cocoa, no sugar added.
The Atkins ones are pretty decent. For peanut butter cups. But Russell Stover makes a lot of candy with stevia in it now. Not that maltitol, which will make you give you the shits.
Well, any of your erythritol, I can't say the damn word.
I know what you mean.
Mixtures, you like a lot of your monk fruits get mixed with it, and that makes a sweetener. Can upset your stomach. Anything like that can upset your stomach. Stevia can do horrible things to your stomach. But it's just a matter of, you know, small doses and getting used to it.
Yeah, I use stevia in my coffee every morning. Stevia and a little bit of flavored creamer. Nothing that's too sugary. And most of the flavored creamer I get isn't that sugary.
Yeah, I still like the to toss in some unsweetened almond milk.
Yep. Now, Dan, you're a tea guy, right? Not coffee guy.
Water guy.
Just water?
Drink a lot of that, too.
I tell you when I will start drinking a lot more water. That is when we move to the house, because our fridge will have water in it. As well as an ice maker. So, and when we move, I threw the Brita pitcher out because I'm sure the fridge will have its own filter.
Two days after he moves in, the foundation cracks and the roof comes down.
Nah.
Back to the apartment he goes.
We have Pex Plumbing, that's the kind of plumbing it basically, you run it just like you do network cable.
Yearly?
No. Yes, they put our furnace in and our tub. Let's pay him for the trial. We'll see how much more is done when I go down. I go down every weekend.
On who?
On my house. That's like I remember. A few weeks ago, I shared that I think they when they poured foundation, they put the pad for the screen room on the wrong side of the house. Well, instead of actually just breaking that up and then pouring the other pad, they just poured the other pad. So right now there's two of them back there. And if they don't tear that other one out, I'm going to be just fine with it. Because I'll just stick my grill right on there. I was going to say, exactly. I'm like, you can leave it. You don't have to do break it up. Unless if they make you break it up, that's fine. But... you can leave it. I have no problem with you leaving it. Because that's what I'm debating, one of two things. Getting a fire pit for right outside the screen room.
Make your own.
Or that. Yeah, either one. Or the other thought was to purchase a wood stove for inside the screen room. Have somebody put a stove pipe that goes outside. But then I thought, nah, I don't know about that. So, I don't know. We'll do something. Actually, what I'll probably put in the screen room is they have those propane heaters that are kind of like, the just kind of freestanding kind of thing. I might put one of those in there. Might be a little safer, too.
Just get one of the ones that looks like a fireplace.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an option, too. The propane-based ones, yeah. But just so that I can get more use out of the room, because today would have been, if I was in the house right now, today would have been a day where after lunch I would have grabbed the laptop, and I have a small external screen that I can bring with me, and I would have set up and sit in the screen room and worked instead of in my office.
Yeah,
it was gorgeous outside. It was 70 degrees in Ohio today.
I should think about doing that one of these days, setting up outside, because I have one of those little, 15-inch portable screens, and I could do that easy enough.
Now, eventually I need to replace the one that I have with one that's got a little higher resolution because it's less than 1080p. So, but
one of those AOCs.
Yeah, an AOC 16-something. I forget the number. It's like a, it's a weird resolution. It's like 1024 by 600 something or something like that. I forget what it is.
I could just open my garage all the way and let the sun shine in.
Yep.
Get some fresh air and still be in the comfort of my chair.
It also has me thinking of when I do move. My chair currently, it still holds me up, but it's starting to get, you know, a little worn, you know, like the vinyl's starting to fall apart in some places, you know.
Yeah, well, this chair that I have out in the garage is pretty well, it was like leather at one point, now it's pretty well right. covered with tape, but it's like oak on the inside. And
oh, nice.
Me being a larger guy, I'm hard on chairs. I've broken a crap ton of chairs. And this chair is just solid. It's going nowhere. Right.
Well, yeah, mine is currently in, it's okay. It's holding me up, but I'm thinking at some point, I have a friend at church, and I think his wife posted a picture of him working one day. And he had his cat in his lap. And what he uses for a desk chair is just a regular chair like you'd have in your living room with lots of cushioning.
And I've done that before, a recliner usually.
That might be what I do for my next office chair.
yeah, my chair before this one, one of the ones that broke, it was a full-on recliner.
There you go. That might be an idea. Because then I can just drag it to the other side of the room when I'm done with work in front of my TV. But I think it's getting late. It's 10 o'clock. I got an 8 o'clock meeting with a guy in Bangalore.
I may have to work this Sunday.
Oh no.
Pretty much, that's my opinion on it. Well, one more story before we close out. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a sad story. Hopefully it's got a happy ending, but we won't know for a while yet. So it's spring break right now. So I got three people out on vacation so that they can hang out with their kids, whatever. And then one of my guys calls me up and tells me that he can't see. Can't see. And he's having a lot of trouble seeing. And he tried to, you know, he says that if he moves his head around a little bit, he can kind of tell what's on the screen. And he was he made it through one whole shift that way. And everybody's telling him, hey, man, your health comes first. Take the time off if you need it. We'll figure it out. And then today, that was 2 days ago that he said that. And then yesterday, like halfway through the shift, he's like, you guys are right. I can't do this. I'm taking time off. And this whole time he's trying to, you know, get into doctors and see doctors and all that. And then today he says, I have a lesion on my brain.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So this guy has had some hard luck with health for a long time now. But yeah, he actually is a good worker. So I'm seriously hoping that they can do something for him and that he gets better. But definitely going to give him all the time off that he needs. And I'm not going to give him any issues about it, but the rest of it is out of my hands. But yeah, it's going to also suck next week because the other half of the team is going to try and take off. So I'm working this Sunday, not specifically because of the that guy being sick, but because one other guy, my normal weekend guy, is on vacation, and then the people that normally cover for him are also on vacation.
That sucks.
So, yeah. I was able to get one guy in for Saturday, but nobody in for Sunday.
Yep. Related news, to health issues. Not my own. I don't have any other than that we already know. But thanks to our governor has expanded the vaccination program. As of tomorrow, I am eligible.
Oh, yeah. One of my coworkers just like 30 minutes ago posted that he's going to be getting his first shot tomorrow.
That's cool. Yeah. The things he's adding as of tomorrow is if you're 50 or older, which I'm not 50 yet. I will be. Or now they've added type 2, if you're type 2 diabetic.
Lance, this guy is like 30.
Unfortunately, I am. Yeah. Yeah. So
he's getting it before you, Joe?
Yeah. I guess he knew where to sign up or something. Oh, but wow. I'm going to talk to the VA either this month or next month and see if I can get it through them.
And I think when I finally do, because like I said, starting tomorrow, I'm eligible, so I can go get one. So can my wife. But I think what I'm going to try to do is I'm going to try and get the Johnson & Johnson one, which is the one-shot deal. Because I hate shots. And I don't want to have to remember to have to go back in a month to go get another one. But, so, yeah. Actually, Ohio was the first one of the first states that got the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. So... I think that one also isn't the one that's based on the mRNA either. So I don't know if it might be safer than the other one, but whatever. I've never been known to get like a, you know, you talked about earlier about possibly getting reactions from eating stevia or drinking stevia in your coffee and stuff. It never bothers me. It never has.
Yeah. Are you a diet soda drinker?
Yeah.
That's why then you've already gotten used to alternate sweeteners.
Aspartame.
Aspartame.
Yep. And they rebranded my diet Dr. Pepper to Dr. Pepper Zero Sugar.
Yeah. I actually got a Dr. Pepper Zero Sugar right next to me right now. You know what's
exactly the same, though.
No, do you know what's really, like, super awesome though for Dr. Pepper? The Diet Dr. Pepper cream soda. It's zero calories and I love it. And it sells out around here so quick that I've only been able to find it the once.
The cherry one's good too. But I've had it. I don't care for it as much as the regular Dr. Pepper. It's a little sweeter, I think, for me, but all right, and then you can pay us out.
Yep, get out of here.
Oh, now everybody wants to leave. We're talking about drinks. Oh no, what did I do?
Oh, Joe, I got a pulse oximeter now.
Cool. So, blood oxygen.
Yes. Yep. It was $15 on Amazon. I couldn't pass it up. Cause I've been wanting to have one just so I can see like what it, when I wake up right off the CPAP mask and see what my
blood oxygen is.
Yeah.
Well, I know that the newer Samsung watches can do can act as echocardiograms.
Yep.
All right.
I hope your coworker.
Me too.
Hope they
man,
can
that's
do something
bad.
For him, man. That sucks.
Yeah, yep. Me too.
All right. So, here we go. See you in a week. I'm happy.
Oh my God. Safe. It's Hacker Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
Hello. My name is Matt, and I've started a new podcast called LibreQuest. I talk about Linux and general technical topics. To get the show, visit LibreQuest.org.
So we can paint anything we want?
anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
Well, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
All this talking about drinks. I gotta order some beer from the brewery.
Yeah.
The brewery that I could see from my house if the building wasn't in the way. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yep. Yep. All right. Oh, yeah. That's didn't have it on the show. Well, the main show. But we our company uses like Bonusly. Yeah, I don't know if you've ever heard of it or not, but it's basically like a way to recognize employees.
Yeah,
you
told us about Bonusly before, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep. My manager's manager gave me 1,000 points Friday. That's like enough to get a $100 gift card on Amazon. So I bought a for my little Osmo Pocket, I bought a they have this extension pole. So you just pull out, there's like a little connector on the front of it. So you pull the little there's like a little plastic guard there. You pull that out and plug that in there. And then at the top of the pole, you can actually move the camera. It has like a little joystick on it. Pretty nice. So, because the Osmo Pocket is a three-axis gimbal-based camera. So, I bought that. I got a T-shirt, which I haven't gotten yet. It says basically, it's a coffee-themed T-shirt because I like coffee. And that pulse oximeter I just talked about.
Nice.
So, yeah, it was worth it. We had like that was like also like our employee appreciation day, and this one was because one of the things that I'm frequently known for on our team is basically training the junior folks, kind of on the spot sometimes, you know, like the one guy Jerry who's on call this week, I help him out all the time. Sometimes to the point where I miss some of my other work, but you know, most it's not production work in a lot of cases when I miss something, but my theory there is I'd rather be training him so that I have more of me, so I don't have to work as hard, you know. So it's like when we do this deployment, basically it's a production server. It's the server itself's already set up in AWS. We just have to install Tomcat on it as well as RabbitMQ and what we call the Lucene messaging adapter, which is essentially it's a Java servlet that we deploy on top of Tomcat. But all of this is related to our product we call Ethos Integration, and they basically are writing an integration hub that works with both with I think it's going to work with all of our ERPs eventually. So then that way, if a third party wants to, or even us wants to write integration with our ERP to another product, like maybe an admissions product or something like that, all they got to do is write it to that API, and that's
write a Slack plugin.
Yeah, they could do that. I don't know what you want to do that for.
But I don't know either. Say goodnight because I got to stop the recording.
Good night, Joel. The bottom of the shower.
In the apartment?
In the house.
Did they find the crack in the foundation yet?
There's no crack in the foundation.
Oh, that's the week after you move in.
Yeah.
Dude, every foundation cracks.
True.
Because it settles, because the builders build the damn houses too fast. They don't let the ground settle. Unless
no,
they
I don't
do.
Know about that.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
That's actually true, yes.
Unless you do a floating slab where you drive pilings 40 feet into the ground and then you pour a concrete slab and then basically the pilings support the slab and that slab will not crack.
Are you getting a basement?
No basement.
Can we just rename the podcast to Joel's New House?
It's pre-show. We can talk about whatever the fuck we want, man.
Yeah.
Whatever. Oh, great. I just loaded up my 30-round Glock mags for my AR-9 that I'm taking to go shoot with the Bearded Black Cowboy this weekend.
Are you going to shoot yourself a new house? If not,
I could.
You can't talk about
shoot
it.
Shoot up his existing one.
I can shoot with 30 rounds. I can shoot a house stencil.
New York house cell?
Not yet. But I figure I still got a year on you.
That's nothing. Like I saw a friend of mine. He posted a house in the same zip code as our old house. Okay. The listing has it going for $400,000, and I would not pay that much for any house in that zip code. But what's funny, though, is if you look at, like, past valuations, like, even within the last year, it had appraisals right around $200,000, maybe $260,000, you know. I mean, property values are going up, and there is a housing shortage pretty much everywhere in the country. A high school friend of mine, she lives in Stowe, Massachusetts. They didn't have one single house to sell it in that city.
Yeah, I haven't been, you know, look, I've been away for 3 weeks. I just kind of getting things squared away here. I'm going away for the weekend, and probably in a couple weeks I'll go back to New York again. So I'm just kind of all over the place. But things are progressing on my house in New York, getting ready for the sale. So, yeah, that's... I'm kind of excited.
See, the nice thing about you not being there... I miss Peggy. But the nice thing about you not being there, though, is that, like, for example, because we lived there, you know, I get, like, a text whenever they arrange the showing, and I'm like, you know, quite a few, like, at least once or twice I said no. You know, because I just had
right,
like a showing, and then my realtor's like, "What did you say no?" I'm like, because I'm not gonna be around, or and sometimes it was like, yeah,
whatever, you're not,
work.
It doesn't matter.
I mean, yeah, because I'm like, one day
point.
we had three showings in one day, and I'm like, that's
so you gotta disappear.
Much. Yeah, it's like that's a little much. It's like.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. They're having cockfights in his backyard and
oh, nothing like that. But you know, it's just like you know, it's
a homeless
like, you
party.
Know, you know, you want to schedule what you want to schedule a showing at dinner time? I'm afraid not. You know, it's like I just got off work. I'm eating. I'm relaxing. They can come the next day. I'm like. I still sold the house in 4 days, so I mean, come on.
Wait, it you sold the house in 4 days, and
yeah,
you had a couple of showings you turned down?
Yeah, I actually did.
Wow.
Yep.
Hey, Rich, maybe you could pick your house up, move it to Columbus, Ohio, and you can sell it in 4 days, too.
Yeah.
You know, I've heard... So my house isn't on the market yet. It's just not ready.
Not sold in 4 days, but I had an offer in 4 days, which I accepted because I'm like, you know, I wasn't going to turn them down for the most part. Well,
$30,000.
Joel plays. Except that we went into the negotiation period, and you know, because they had an inspector come, and they wanted all this stuff fixed, and some of it was shit the inspector should have known better. You know, like he wanted us to replace all the bathroom sinks, and I'm like, yeah, not happening. You know, so me and the wife, we went through the list and said, this is what we're gonna fix. You know, and we talked to the guy who we had a during the sale period. We actually had one of the bathrooms fixed up and in a toilet fixed and stuff like that. And so I called that guy back and said, hey, I got some more stuff that I need to fix. And we went through the list, and some of the things they wanted were just plain stupid. Like he wanted you to put a drain swell, because apparently there was water coming in through the cinder block. I'm like, well, first off,
don't buy the house.
Yeah, that's almost what I wanted.
Don't
to
buy
say.
It.
Yeah, but things like he wanted us to put a drain swell. Well, if we would have done that, the dirt from the drain swell would have covered up where the pipe comes out of the house for the sump pump. And it's like, yeah, no. You know, and things like that. So we, you know, we went down the list and said, we'll do this, and that. Oh, and we basically took half of the repairs, and we said, and we want to increase the price of the house by X amount, and they bought it. So that's how you do that. I would say we probably fixed a good majority of the list, and some of them actually wound up being easy. Like I had one socket, we replaced that, and ended up fixing like three or four of them because they were just all in the same circuit.
So no, I replaced all the outlets and switches in the house.
Right.
It's all freaking new.
Yeah, that stuff's not expensive either. So, I mean, but like some of the things like were just pure cosmetic bullshit that should never have been correct, you know, put on a housing inspection.
It's a dumb negotiating tool.
Yeah. So I mean, we said we'll snake all the drains, but we're not replacing the sink. Yeah, that was on the list. That was one of the remedies they wanted. I'm like, yeah, okay.
Oh, I mean, were your drains like draining slow?
Nope, they were all functional.
So then buy another house.
Yeah. Well, that was cheap enough. It's like I'm like fine, you know, whatever. They're not gonna find anything. You know, a guy ran the snake down and like, yep, there's nothing in there. Okay, yeah, I knew that. You know.
Look, I was on the roof snaking the frickin' vent and snaking a toilet this weekend.
And cleaning the gutters, which...
I did that.
Here's the funniest thing is, on my old property, there was one... We did not have one tree that went above the roof line, so there's no leaves in there, okay? There was no problem with anything draining, okay? The only thing in the gutter was silt just come from years of rain and stuff, you know, which basically little pieces of the shingles.
The roof,
you know,
little,
yeah. Yeah, you know.
Yeah, you get the gravel.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, that's the only thing that was in there, and we're like, yeah, we'll have them clean it out. Okay. You know.
I found using, like, a spackle knife worked real good on that.
Yeah, we just actually took a hose up. I think he just took a hose up and just sprayed the shit out of it, and that kind of caused it all to go away. I guarantee you, it's probably back. Because it's just, you know, over time, it'll go back. But it's like, there's no lease in it. There's nothing stopping it from draining. It's like, you know, it's stupid little bullshit like that. You know, and you know, certain things, they had a point. You know, like, when my son was, like, 7 or 8, quite literally ripped the door off our bedroom hinges. Now, granted, it was a cheap shit door that the builders put on there, but, you know, big difference. The difference between our old house and the new house is all the doors inside are solid core.
It doesn't mean the hinges are any stronger.
No.
So if you rip a door off a hinge, solid core or hollow core will make a difference.
The big difference there, though, was because really how it happened was these were essentially like a wood frame with a piece of veneer on either side, and then inside of it was just cardboard. I'm serious. That was what
yeah, that's how hollow core doors are built.
Yep. And
hot glue.
When we first moved in, there was some issues. The doors were not opening and closing correctly over the carpet.
So somebody sunk the hinges too far.
Pretty much, I think, is what they did. But so to fix it, what did the builder do? They cut off the part of the bottom of the door. Well, that made that door significantly weaker, and that's how it happened. And it didn't happen until, like, you know, years later. So it's like, eh. I'm like, it doesn't matter.
Well, if you don't let your kid hang from the doors, that crap won't happen.
No, it wasn't anything like that. But, you know, it's when you have a kid with autism, weird shit like that will happen. Because he has a high tolerance for pain. He doesn't know what pain is in some cases.
Living with you, you figure you'd know that already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so no, not gonna be that problem.
The phone yet?
Yeah, did you? Start the show when we talk about that, though.
No, I haven't, so... Pat, I'm going to have another one of those videos made. Pat, wish you were here.
Okay.
Bum, bum, bum. We start the show.
Yeah. Question is, Dan, are you ready
for a good time
or a bad time? I don't know.
Am I ready for what?
The show.
The show must go on. 897.
There's a show?
Yep. 897.
Whoa.
Hey, I'm going to use Ansible to build a server tomorrow. Hey.
Oh, you can write up your documentation.
I already did before because it's a production server, so I had to write a change.
All right, we can talk about it. Hold on. We can talk about Rich's problem, too.
I didn't write the playbook.
All of them or just one of them?
Well, we'll see how many we can get through.